On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're trying authoritarianism on for size with Kate Winslet in The Regime on Sky and Now, discovering why you should never let a stranger into your house in The Cuckoo on Channel 5, and dealing with a persistent stalker in Baby Reindeer on Netflix. Plus, we're beaming up to the Starship Discovery for a one-on-one with her captain, a Sonequa Martin-Green, joins us on the show to discuss the ship's final voyage. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is being stymied at every turn this week. We wanted to review Fallout, but it's embargoed, so that can't discuss on Pilot Plus. We wanted to watch Michael Douglas in Franklin, but that's very embargoed, so much so, in fact, we can't even do that one on Plus. It's been locked down to the day it airs. We even came within an antler of not being able to review Baby Reindeer at all, as our screeners didn't arrive until very, very late last night, meaning only one of us has actually managed to see it. So it's a bit ramshackle this week, not because there's nothing on, but because we've been gagged by the man, and not in a good, sexy way. But that's okay, because if you're going to get trussed up and ball gagged, it's best to be among friends. And I'm joined by two similarly NDA'd compatriots in the form of a clearly disgusted Kay Rivero and Boyd Hilton. How are you both?
How are you, more to the point? What is going
on? It's 8 o'clock in the morning, Kay. I don't know if you've noticed. Yeah.
It's bad enough that it's 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, you're talking about gags and sex games.
It's all got a bit BDSM for this early in the morning. I can only apologize. So I'm off this week, but martyr that I am, I am doing the podcast, but we have to do it remotely so that these two can get to the office. So we're doing an early start this morning. So if we're slightly incoherent, that's honestly probably not the reason why, but it's a contributing factor. Boydie, I like that you're wearing an Arsenal kit this early in the morning. Do you sleep in this Arsenal kit? Are these your Arsenal pajamas?
No, but we won last night, so...
Against Luton, it's topical. 2-0. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Hey, look at me with the football knowledge.
Very good. Yeah.
What's happened to you since your time off?
I saw a headline.
All right.
And you know what? I saw a headline and it said Arsenal 2-0 Luton. And I was like, I understand why they've done that for symmetry, but grammatically, it's very upsetting.
Yeah, that's the kind of standard way they print results of football matches. Yeah, but no, it was. Yeah, I'm celebrating that victory. Good. We're top of the league as we speak right now. We're top of the league. We
won't. Are Luton a formidable team, Boydie? They don't seem to be. I've never heard of them.
No,
so. No,
they're decent, but no, they're like they're possibly going to be relegated.
So you're patting yourself on the back for kicking a puppy. This is what you're saying.
A little bit, yeah. But okay, good. You know, when you're top of the league with 8 games to go, then you have to celebrate.
Well, apologies really to any Luton fans. Let's move on now to what we've been watching. Kay, let's begin with you.
So this week I have caught up and I finished The Dry, which, as you know, I was a bit obsessed with anyway. And having finished it all, so that's the, it's on ITVX, it's with Roisin Gallagher, and it's about her returning to her family home. And, you know, she's the recovering alcoholic. It's so good. It is so good. I mean, just continue to love it even more. So I'd highly recommend, if you haven't got into it, start. And if you're ploughing through, continue, because the storytelling and the character build, like the characters are so well drawn. I just love all of them. So yeah, I've watched that. Then the other thing I've been watching is I've continued to watch Un Amore, which we reviewed on here, which is the Italian romantic drama, as you remember.
Oh, yes.
Really like that. So I think I'm on episode 3 or 4 or 6. And it continues to delight. And I have become a bit obsessed with the lead actress because I just think she's beautiful.
This was our Pilot Plus Italian language double bill, where we did the Italian porn show and then we did the Italian love show as a kind of counterbalance.
Right. It was subtitles galore.
It was, yeah.
And finally, right, so this isn't pilot territory, but I'm going to mention it anyway because I reviewed it for Heat and I really liked it, which is Big Zoo Goes to Mecca.
Who's Big Zoo?
Right. Big Zoo is a grime artist and a TV chef. And yeah, so his name is Zuha Hassan, and he doesn't claim to be a model Muslim, but Islam, you know, is very important to him. And he decides to go to Mecca during Ramadan, and it follows his journey with his best mates, Tubbsy and Haider. And honestly, I really enjoyed it. So I'd recommend, if anyone is in the market, if you like Big Zoo, or even if you don't, if you just want to learn more about Islam, check it out.
When's it on, Kay? What channel? I mean, it's very vague.
Yeah.
Okay, listen.
What day, what date, and crucially, what year, Kay? Yeah.
No, listen, I want to give you some insight.
No, wait.
The reason why The reason why Boydo's saying that is because, oh, God, all right,
well,
I'm really lifting the veil.
It would be a reader service for one. But yeah.
Well, listener service even, but yeah.
Please listen, yeah.
He's saying that because when I review stuff at Heat and I send it through to him, I will just send it with the title and my thoughts on it, and I never put on any of the TX, the transmission details, and because I just think,
so,
you know,
lack of basic professionalism, that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, but yeah. Boyd has that information to his, you know, his fingertips, so I just think he can add it easily. So, but it's a constant, it's a constant back and forth between us, and he's always teasing me about it, so that's why he's bringing it up now.
I see.
I said it was on BBC.
Well, no. I mean, literally, you've recommended this program. You've not mentioned what channel or when it's on.
I did. So actually, what I've checked, Boydo didn't have his listening ears on. I said it was on BBC. Therefore,
BBC?
It will be on iPlayer. Yeah, iPlayer.
Somewhere on the British Broadcasting Corporation, you will find Big
listen.
Zoo Goes to Mecca.
Right. Do you know what? I'll talk you through it. Go to iPlayer and look up Big Zoo. Yeah, that's
well,
how it
you,
works.
Well, okay, I'll tell you now, you won't find it yet, this program yet, because it's not on until the 14th of April, Sunday, yes, 9
oh
p.m.
Oh my God, Kai, you have let our listeners down.
Egg in my face, no!
Thank me later, it's fine.
Oh God, I'm so annoyed
you
myself.
You are hoist by your own petard by being a TX Nazi on this podcast.
Yeah,
no, just for being a twat, I'm embarrassed. Okay, fine. All right, apologies. Oh. Thank you, Boyd, for as always being the wind beneath my wings.
That's okay. It's fine.
I've actually got a bit red in the face. Right, okay.
Oh God,
moving
I wasn't
on.
Trying to humiliate you. I was just, you know, pointing out.
You don't need to try. I've done it myself.
Oh, now I feel bad.
No, don't feel bad.
Don't.
This has been enlightening.
But Big Zoo Goes to Mecca, watch it. Right, over to you guys.
Big Boyd goes to Channel 5. What's next?
Now she's laughing. Well, I have watched all of Ripley. Which we reviewed on Plus. I finished
it. Did it suddenly burst into colour in the manner of Pleasantville?
No. It's in beautiful black and white. We reviewed it on Plus, so you know, loyal listeners will know that I really liked it there. It's a slow burn, but it is very, very clever, very satisfying. Andrew Scott's amazing. It's the best, it's the most beautifully shot show of the year.
I want to shout out to John Nugent of Empire fame, who wrote our review of it, who decided to refer to this show as Eat, Slay, Love. And it tickled me. I thought that was very entertaining.
That's very good. Yeah, that's brilliant. And the other thing, that's on the Netflix now. And the other thing that's on Netflix now, which you will be reviewing on the Empire podcast, but I'm going to blatantly mention
the
it.
Film. You mean
yes.
the film.
Film. I don't care. Okay. I don't care.
Come on, Boyd. Everyone wants to know.
Yeah, it's Scoop. You know, really? I mean, has it been shown in cinemas? I don't think so. Is it a two-hour film made for television? I think so. Is it on television? Yes. Therefore, you know. I'm reviewing it. What's Kay's?
Sorry to interrupt, Boyd. James is taking his jumper off. That's allowed, right? But he's taken off in a very unusual fashion. He made it sort of into a little capelet around his arms and then seemed to get caught up as if there were mitts down his sleeves.
I got a little bit
stuck. You know what?
Sorry.
I think that's because he didn't want to unveil his manly chest to to.
Well, Kay's already easily distracted this morning. I didn't want to make that any worse.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Boyd. Yes, Scoop.
Yes, Scoop is on the Netflix now. And it is the dramatization. I mentioned this, I think, when I went to a screening ages ago, an early screening at Netflix. And it's dramatization of Sam McAllister, who was the kind of guest booker on Newsnight, and how she and her colleagues somehow managed to convince Prince Andrew to give a television interview on Newsnight. With the brilliant Emily Maitlis, played by Gillian Anderson. And it's all about how they wrangled this interview, the background to it, what was going on with Prince Andrew and his very, very dodgy friendship with Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein, who subsequently, of course, died in prison in America. It stars Rufus Sewell as Prince Andrew with incredible makeup and prosthetics. Billy Piper as Sam McAllister. Killy Hawes as Amanda Thurtick, who was like Prince Andrew's kind of press relations woman, etc. But I absolutely loved it. Bottom line is, I don't know what they're going to. I don't know. Have you watched it yet, James? Because you've been reviewing it in the Empire podcast, presumably.
We are, you know, on account of it being a film.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I have not watched it yet. I have not.
Okay. Well,
I can't wait.
Save you the trouble. It's brilliant. I just thought it was really cleverly, a really clever bit of storytelling. It starts off with a paparazzi trying to get pictures of Prince Andrew in New York, played by Connor Swindells from Sex Education. And just the whole very, very, very clever bit of storytelling. It is directed by Philip Martin, who worked on episodes of The Crown, and it's written by Peter Moffat. And it's just a really smart, incredibly entertaining, riveting account of this extraordinary moment when Prince Andrew, you know, talking about going for pizza in the Pizza Express and not sweating and all of that stuff. And the recreation of the actual interview itself is the centerpiece, if you like, and that is fascinating. But, you know, my favorite thing about all is just Emily Maitlis, Gillian Anderson's Emily Maitlis is just so brilliant. I can imagine a version of this story being told better than it is. That's my... although, of course, the funny thing is Emily Maitlis is producing another version of this story, which is a miniseries she's making for Prime Video. So there will be another version of this story.
A documentary or a dramatisation?
Dramatisation. Okay. Yeah. Dramatisation. So there's a rival project. But I loved this. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. Disappointingly, not about ice cream. But, you know, what can you do?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you can't win them all.
No.
Yeah. But it's very entertaining nevertheless.
Okay, good stuff. Any other films you want to review, you know, while we're doing that?
I mean, like,
Dev Patel's directorial debut came out, you know, yeah, that's supposed to be very good.
I missed that because I had to rewrite an article, he says. But, which was fair enough, to be honest. Civil War, that was very good as well, yeah.
Yes, I missed that screening.
Are you reviewing that this week?
No, that'll be next week, but I won't have seen it because I will have been on holiday during the screening, so that's unfortunate because I really want to see that. Alex Garland.
Well, I can see it for you if you want. I can, you know.
Yeah. Come and join our Civil
White,
War.
White middle-aged man's view of Civil War, I'm available.
Some more quality Helen time for Boydo.
Oh, yes.
He's going to replace us one of these days, Kay. He's going to replace us.
Oh, yeah, I know. I literally had a discussion with Helen yesterday about it, so, yeah.
Oh,
She's gunning for pilot.
Dear.
Oh God, what have I watched? Not a lot, if I'm honest with you, because I like to take a little bit of a holiday from TV when I'm on holiday, if it's all possible. But I did press on with The Gentleman, which I enjoyed an awful lot. In fact, I watched during my roughly 7-hour journey back from Salford last week on Easter Friday, such is my dedication to the Empire podcast. I watched a lot of The Gentleman on the train when I wasn't talking to Chris and Helen. So that was good. And I'm really enjoying it.
Question. Not about The Gentleman.
Okay.
Were you not talking to Chris and Helen because of the terrible
fate that befell
your head?
Yes, because Helen tried to kill me. Mm.
For listeners who can't see the image we're looking at, is that James has got a minute, very small plaster on his head, but which makes him look a little bit like Mr. Bump plaster. He was a victim of,
murder. An attempted murder, I think, is what we can discuss this. 100%. Yes, Helen O'Hara, possibly on Boyd's instructions, it's unclear. Decided to try and murder
embroil
me
in your ridiculous.
We had just finished the Salford show, and we were in the post show high, and we got a lift back to our hotel. I thought I'd be helpful, and there's a moral to this story: never try and be helpful. I thought, do you know what? I will get the merch out of the boot for Chris, so he doesn't have to lift it. So I picked up the suitcase merch. Helen had already taken the mugs out. She didn't look to see what was happening, so she slammed the boot of this large SUV on my head, concussing me and cutting my head open. So that was great. It was a really great end to the tour, that was. And then I had a massive argument with the guys in the reception of the hotel because I asked for the first aid kit and they said they don't have one. And I was like, I think you're fine. As a first aider, I'm here to tell you should have one.
And then did he try and slam your head in some other door?
A little bit, yeah. He went a bit Big Chris from Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. So, that was an interesting end. So I now have my tiny little plaster. Frankly, this plaster is just here to be passive aggressive, really. So whenever I see Helen, she feels the guilt. She feels the guilt and she knows that she could have killed me and she missed. And you come at the king, you best not miss.
I think, yeah, exactly. I think it's a missed opportunity there. I would write Whack-A-Day on it. Really? Really small. Yeah.
It does look like I've lost a particularly vicious game of Mallet's Mallet. I will give you that. So that was the end of the Empire podcast tour. And so obviously that's why I'm not on the Empire podcast this week, because I'm avoiding Helen lest she try and kill me again.
Literally, where there's blame, James, there's a claim. You could be...
That's it. I should sue her. I should sue her. And I don't know what I'd get out of that. But I'm considering it. Or, you know, contracting a team of assassins, we'll see. But yeah, so anyway, I watched The Gentlemen. I think it's loads of fun. I think Theo James and Kaya Scodelario are both very, very funny. And yeah, I'm very much enjoying it, despite the slightly scathing Empire review of that show. I think it's a lot of fun. So yeah, enjoying The Gentlemen. I have also been given, I say I've been given, they have made available to, let's be honest, all press, the screener episodes for an upcoming Apple TV sci-fi show, which I'm very, very excited about. So I
just say the name.
Dark
say
Matter. Name. It is called Dark Matter. So I'm gonna get into that on the weekend, and I'm very excited. Very excited.
Apple really going for the sci-fi, aren't they?
They are. That's really why they're my absolute favourites, because they have impeccable taste in genres.
Although they wouldn't let us see Franklin.
They'd let us see it. They just wouldn't let us talk about it. So so that's unfortunately Franklin. I don't know if we'll actually end up talking about Franklin.
I wasn't disappointed about that development, I have to say.
Really? You weren't? You're not feeling presidential? How can you not like Michael Douglas?
I love Michael Douglas. I just feel like we've watched a lot of dramas about American historical figures at the moment.
Yeah, so. We've done the Lincoln assassination, and yes. Benjamin Franklin will have to live to fight another day. There's been one, but we're done. There's one and done.
Yeah.
There has been another one. I just can't remember what it is. Anyway.
Is there?
I feel like that's it. Yeah.
Okay.
I do not recall another presidential history show. But do you know what? Who knows? Maybe if we run out of shows, we'll end up doing it next week. Who knows? But in the meantime, let us have a listener question. Kay, what have you got for us this week?
Okay. So this week, the question comes from... I think I've read this name out before.
Good start.
Kendo Doobie Doo. Kendo Doobie Doo or something.
Kendo Doobie Doo.
Yeah, that's it. AKA Chuckling. And he says, or she says, if you were murdered, what TV detective would you want on the case?
If you were murdered by Helen.
Yes, exactly. In fact, I feel like this is from Helen. This is her pseudonym.
Yeah.
Which TV detective would you want to solve the case?
I am 99.99% sure that we have answered this question before, but fuck it. I'm going with it anyway because I don't care. You will want Poirot, okay? So there you go. I've answered for you.
Mm-hmm.
Boydie.
I mean, it's annoying that you're right.
Yeah. I can't remember who your choice was, Boydie.
No, I can't remember either.
I don't think we have answered this question before.
I'm certain we have. I'm pretty sure the answer I gave is I would want Vic Mackey investigating my murder because then he just beat the living shit out of everyone until he found out who it was. So Helen, watch it. Big Vic is coming for you. Boydie, I can't remember. Tell us. Think of this as like a post bag from the vault crossover where we're doing a from the vault post bag. It's great.
What about Columbo or Perry Mason?
Columbo for me. Yeah, I think it would have to be.
Is that just because Columbo. Then we'd see who killed you from the very beginning?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
you see that. Mystery, no drama.
No. It wouldn't be exploiting my death for TV drama purposes. The focus would be on the process. Yeah, Peter Columbo's process. And just he is the
procedural investigation.
The legend, Columbo started it all. Well, I mean, it certainly was one of the first TV murder mystery formats. First episode directed by Steven Spielberg, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, I'd like maybe to get Spielberg back. You know, it's a special.
Oh, I think it was about your death, of course.
Yeah.
There'd be absolutely no shadow of a doubt he'd be back.
Yeah, exactly.
It depends on what the evidence is, though. Because, for example, if your body was found with, like, the time of death, the date of death, the year of death, like, engraved in the corpse, and the people were like, it's Kay.
Mm.
She did it.
Why? Because I'd be so literal like that.
Yeah, no, because you're very hot on the TX stuff. Obviously, this episode notwithstanding.
I can't believe you didn't get that reference.
Oh God, no!
Explain the joke.
It's early.
Do you know what? Oh my God! Yes, no, I get that now. Sorry.
Yeah.
Again, a little bit embarrassed. No, this is a going podcast. Well. I'm enjoying this one.
Yeah. There'll be a stamp on my corpse with the day and the date and the year.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's what the listeners would want.
It is.
James and I would start up a ramshackle podcast trying to explore your death as well in the form of...
Only Murders in the Voidy.
Yeah. In tribute to the Void.
Yeah. Maybe the other person who could solve it, I'm coming right up to date now, is Darby Hart from A Murder at the End of the World, just to give that Emma Corrin character a go. She, you know, they were pretty brilliant at solving crimes. And also with a very modern, you know, so I'm sure... My death would be, you know, there'd be loads of online stuff to investigate, you know, And so someone very good at the tech would help a lot, like Darby Hart.
Oh, anyway. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
They'd have to go through all your appliances and, you know.
Unpick your digital life forensically and find out who it was. When you said there'd be an online, I thought you were about to say there would be, obviously with my dad, there would be an online outpouring of grief. I thought you'd go for it. I was like, oh, steady. Yes, all of our, I firmly believe that all of our listeners would be, there'd be like a day of national mourning.
I'm telling you for nothing, I would wear black for at least a year. And not just because it suits me.
Yes. that's mainly because you'd be trying to pretend that you weren't the one who murdered me.
Yeah.
In a fit of fury when I mentioned the TX day of a show that you didn't
when you
know
make
about.
Me actually do my job. Yeah. Maybe, slip with one eye open, Boyd.
Maybe you killed me with a rolled up copy of the Radio Times or something.
It's like the body was found with listings stuffed in his mouth.
Yeah. Have you ever seen High Anxiety? You know Mel Brooks's piss take of Hitchcock thrillers. There's a brilliant scene in it where he pastiches the psycho's shower scene, and instead of a knife, the person who attacks Mel Brooks's character in the shower wields a newspaper, and he's like smashes him over the head with a newspaper, and instead of blood going down the plug hole, it's like newsprint going down the plug hole. So I think Kay would recreate that moment with the TV listings pages for sure.
Well, I would bludgeon you to death with the Radio Times.
Unless we forget, Ash tries to kill Ripley, not that one, in Alien with a rolled up magazine. Yes. Possibly a copy of Heat. It's never made clear.
Yeah. Could be a copy of Heat, yeah.
The question will be with my murder is, like, obviously Helen's responsible, that goes without saying, but was Boydie an accomplice? That's going to be the question. How involved is Boydie?
Because his motive, obviously, being that he wants your spot on the Empire podcast.
He wants my spot on the Empire podcast, but he wants Helen to have my spot on the Pilot TV podcast. He has all the motives. The motives.
James's last words would be, it's a film, it's a film.
That would be your final murder. That would be your final vengeance, wouldn't it? Be like, my death will be dramatized in a 90-minute film and you'll review it on this podcast just to spite me. That's what will happen, 100%.
Exactly.
In keeping with the ramshackle format of this week's podcast, that was our incredibly ramshackle question. Right, okay. Time now for a guest, I believe. And this week's guest is Sonequa Martin-Green, a.k.a. Captain Michael Burnham of the USS Discovery. How excited are you, Kay? So, as we talked about, Discovery's back for its final season. Sonequa Martin-Green has been there from the start, and she's had quite the arc, you know, having fallen from grace, having been disgraced, and then having clawed her way back up to the captain's chair over the course of 5 seasons. We wanted to talk to her. I wasn't able to do it on account of being in Salford, so I called in a professional. I called Liam Dempsey from the Spocklight podcast to get his trek on and speak to Captain Michael Burnham. And this is what happened. Engage.
Hello, Sonequa Martin-Green. Welcome to the Pilot TV podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you doing? Thank you for having me.
I am good. I'm very excited to talk about Star Trek Discovery, especially this final season. It's looking to be pretty epic, so let's get into it for sure. Watching the first episode of the season, it seems similar to season 4. There's a mystery to solve here, but it feels like more of a puzzle box narrative this time, almost like a treasure hunt for Michael and her crew.
Yes, I love those phrases. Treasure hunt, puzzle box. What did you say? Puzzle box narrative?
Puzzle box narrative.
That's fantastic. I love it. And that is exactly what it is. Very much so. This is our adventure season. This is our season where we still deal with the big existential questions, really the biggest existential questions that one can ask in this season. But we also, you know, do our best to have fun along the way and sort of lift up the tone just a bit.
Fantastic. And in terms of Michael herself, how do you feel about the way that character has evolved from the cooler, more detached Vulcan-raised figure in season 1 to the incredibly empathetic, warm leader that she is now? Do you feel like you've been able to bring more of yourself to the role as time's gone on?
I feel that, well, I love how you described it. You said cold and detached to warm and empathetic. I love that. I might even steal that from you. But I brought all of myself to the role from the beginning, just in terms of my in terms of my passion, in terms of my effort, and my sort of like, you know, what I have to give, my craft. But I didn't use my own life at any point. But I do feel that Burnham being cold and detached and Vulcan-like in the beginning was such an interesting place to start, because this woman was also riddled with guilt and trauma, and needed healing, needed restoration, needed to grow, needed to stretch, needed to learn so much about herself and the world around her. And so we see that happen over the course of these seasons. We see the healing, the confrontation, the restoration. We see the failures. We see the victories. We get to watch this growth happen. And I believe that it was earned every step of the way. So while it was fast, it was also gradual at the same time. And the captain that I was able to be as Burnham is only because of the journey that I had been on, right? And that's one of the things that we wanted to offer with our iteration of Trek, with Star Trek Discovery, was, hey, you're going to get to see people become who they're meant to be. They're not going to start out that way. You're going to get to see them become who they're meant to be. And so it's the case for everybody, not just Burnham.
For me, it's kind of like she learns how important her connections to the people around her are over time.
That's exactly, yes, absolutely. And you got to connect within first to do that, right? It's like you got to settle yourself before you can connect, before you can commune, right? And that's what had to happen. I had to decide for myself who I believe I am and what I believe I'm here to do as Burnham, rather than let Sarek decide for me, or let Starfleet decide for me, or let any captain or any crew decide for me. I had to decide for myself. And that is what I believe gave way to those connections that you're talking about, and that empathy and that warmth that that you see with Captain Burnham.
What do you think the legacy of Discovery will be within the wider Star Trek universe, given that this is a show which not only ushered in a completely new era for the franchise, but also pushed the timeline further into the future than it's ever gone before within this world?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we can't really say what the legacy will be fully in this present moment. I think we'll have to wait a little while to see it more clearly. But I know what we want it to be. And I've said this before. I hope that Discovery has this legacy of going boldly, right? Of course, every Trek is going boldly, but there's a sense with Discovery of going more boldly than ever before, right? Because we took all these elements of Trek and just doubled down on them, tripled down on them, even quadrupled down on them. So we took the serialization of Deep Space Nine and doubled down on it and remembered what happened yesterday every step of the way. We decided that we would evolve because of that, that there would be permanent change in our story and with our characters. You see this woman have her journey to captain. She's not a fully baked captain at the top. You get to watch that process unfold. We also brought, and this is much due to, or largely, I should say, largely due to Alex Kurtzman, the cinema, the innovation technically and visually, he really brought that to a TV series of Trek. Right. We had seen that cinema, of course, in the films, but he brought that to the TV series of this Trek iteration. And then, you know, the diversity. I mean, we went all the way with the diversity and broke so many barriers with that and made television history. So I hope that people can I hope that that's what we leave behind is this legacy of going boldly, going further, and evolution.
Infinite diversity and infinite combinations, right?
IDS.
And How did you find that massive shift into the far future in season three, which only expanded that cinematic scope? And it kind of changed the kind of show it was, essentially, because suddenly, in terms of space terms, the crew found themselves kind of like in the Wild West until they ran into Starfleet again.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And then suddenly here you have this crew that has really become a family now because they decided to leave everything behind and be together and save the future together. They then become here at the center, you know, being so integral in rebuilding the Federation and rebuilding rebuilding that connection to the Federation from Starfleet and with the other species and planets. I loved that jump to the future. I think that it was quite genius, actually. We were bound in a lot of ways because we were in. We did want to be innovative. We do believe that Trek needs to make you look forward and not look back. You know, people wanted us to look more like TOS. And, you know, our co-creator, Alex Kurtzman, and our showrunner, and as well as Michelle Paradise, and even our original showrunners, Aaron Harberts and Gretchen Berg, you know, they all understood that we need to, we have to use the technology we have today. We can't make it look like 1966 because then people are going to be looking behind them and not in front of them. So it was really about, what is Trek really about? Trek is really about innovation. It's about looking forward. It's about hope. You have to look forward to hope. You know what I mean? And so I think that us being able to jump to the future allowed us to find ourselves. It allowed us to establish our own identity. And even get the chance to create canon. We were creating canon every day. You know, okay, so this is what this is now. Okay, so this is what this is. You know, it was really exciting, really thrilling, and I think that it helped shape us into who we ultimately became.
I agree. Star Trek should always be pushing forward, and obviously, no spoilers. But do you emotionally feel satisfied as to where Michael's journey ends for now?
1,000%. 1,000%. I think they ended it. I've said this, and I'll continue to say this. They ended it powerfully and poetically. I was shocked. I was blown away. It was a gift. So yes, the answer to that question is yes.
That is fantastic to hear. All that's left to say, thank you so much for speaking to me today. And congratulations on being such a huge part of taking Star Trek so successfully into a brand new era.
Oh, man. Thank you so much for saying that. It was great talking to you.
That was Nicole Martin Green. What have we got in the way of news, people?
We have got the news that Grey's Anatomy has been renewed for its 21st season.
Dear God.
Listen, a lot of people love Grey's Anatomy, James.
Hey, I watched like 8 years of it.
Well, now you've got loads more to watch.
Oh, God.
So also, we've got news about Suits and the fact that Patrick J. Adams and Sarah Rafferty are launching a Suits rewatch podcast with SiriusXM, in which they'll break down the show, which has also got a new audience since launching on Netflix last year. And they'll be diving into each episode, sharing behind-the-scenes stories about the series and sitting down with each of the stars of the... Well, not each of them, actually, because obviously there's some they won't be sitting down with, but a lot of the stars of the show.
Okay.
You mean Meghan Markle won't be taking part? Are you sure?
Listen, I can't say either way. I don't know.
No, she might do.
Assume.
But this ties in that news with the news which think broke maybe a week ago or slightly more, that the BBC has bought up Suits. Which is controversial, didn't you? Yeah, did you see this? Yeah, the BBC is going to be showing Suits on the aforementioned iPlayer, your favourite, Kay.
God,
I'm not sure. Kay, remind me, how do you access that again?
Oh,
dang. Anyway, I'm not sure if it's going to be on any linear channel. It might be, but it's definitely going to be on iPlayer, and they've brought up all the seasons of Suits. And of course, because the BBC is spending money on something that Meghan Markle is in, it aroused the ire, shall we say, of some of our press.
Of course
who
it did.
Immediately, yeah, who kind of slagged off the BBC for spending money on an old show that stars Meghan Markle, basically. But, you know, fair enough. There's those people who haven't seen it because it's been on, it was, I think it was on Dave here for a while.
It's a good show. It's a good show. I watched it, up until the two of them, Meghan Markle and What's His Chops, left.
I've got to tell you, I haven't actually watched it, so I might watch...
It's quite legal procedural. Yeah,
it's clever. Yeah, it's smart, clever. It's a bit Alan McBealish, isn't it?
It's got moments of that with slightly less surrealism, but...
Well, you know, I'm not saying it's exactly like Alan McBealish. I'm just saying...
I like this podcast. You're
dancing babies.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's fair enough, and it's interesting.
Very quickly, James, this is specifically for you.
Oh, no, this is
you.
Very important. Go for it.
Yeah. Gladiators is going to return to the BBC. I know how much you loved it the first time round.
Hang on.
Reboot.
What? Hang on. But Gladiators has already returned. How is it returning twice?
I know, but it's getting another series.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes.
It was the least surprising recommission ever because it's been one of the hits of the year.
It has been the biggest entertainment launch for a new series in 7 years, by the way.
Oh, good God.
With the 28-day figures showing 9.8 million viewers watched the first episode. And the series averaging 8.3 million viewers today.
I'm just saying, people, Foundation is a thing that actually exists and is out there. What are you doing with your lives?
Well, listen.
Or the other show there was news about, the other James favourite, you must have seen this, James, unless you've been on holiday, means you're boycotting all the news.
A little bit of that, but yes.
The Witcher.
Oh, yes, it's had some casting.
Yeah, casting news. Another James classic. Season 4. Will feature Sharlto Copley, who's always very good. James Purefoy, who's always very good. Danny Woodburn, who I don't know so well. Copley will play the infamous bounty hunter Leo Bonhart from the Witcher novels.
Yeah.
Important character, James?
I can't remember. I mean, to be fair, I've not read all the novels, so that's possibly why, but I don't remember
what?
That name. And I know James Purefoy is playing a court advisor and spy called Skellen. The only one I do know is actually Danny Woodburn, who's playing Zoltan. I know that character. But don't know the other two.
Skellen is a high-ranking spy court advisor too. And now I can't pronounce, this is the classic James pronunciation.
Is it Amir
word.
Van Emery's?
Amir.
Yes. The white flame.
Yes. And of course.
That's an easy one to say.
Yeah, the Nilfgaardian Emperor, boy.
You say that, Kay, but you know, if you'd have seen Emhyr on the page, you would have known
joking.
What to do. You would have broken up.
Again, this is a lot funnier to us than it is to any of our listeners who never get to enjoy Kay's mangling of people's names because we always cut it out.
Oh, they keep on threatening to release the blooper reel, but I'm like, no, I would die of embarrassment / be cancelled, so let's not do that. Oh, God.
I'm surprised.
And
what
of course,
you...
a reminder that... Go on, sorry,
No,
James.
No, continue. Continue with your reminder.
No, I was just saying, a reminder that Liam Hemsworth is the lead in the Witcher. Henceforth.
He is. Yeah, well, the jury's still out on how well that goes without big Henry Cavill in the role. But, you know, I'm willing to give it a chance.
Yeah.
But, Boyd, you've not mentioned clearly the most important news for you, which is that season 2 of The Sandman has announced its episode titles. I have a note here from Sanjeev Bhaskar who says, Boydie in particular should pay attention. No, he didn't really. But the first episode is called The Song of Orpheus.
When's that going to arrive then? By the way,
you ask a good question. It is arriving in checks the internet. No release date has been announced. So yeah, don't know.
Okay, but I'm glad you mentioned that because you reminded me that there was more episode title news from Doctor Who, which is much more imminent, to be fair, than that show. And over the weekend, they released this news. So I'm just going to go through them because it's all very exciting. And also who the writers and directors are. So in basically the first full season of this Doctor's run, it will begin with Space Babies, which is written by Russell T. Davis and directed by Julianne Robinson, which I may or may not have seen. I've seen it.
Soon to be Kay's favourite episode of television. Just, you know, saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. You're going to be so furious when we review it.
I don't think I can handle him again on the Doctor Who thing.
No, yeah. Space Babies is a really interesting episode, I have to say. It's going to be fascinating to see what we think of it, particularly James.
Oh, so do you think it's one that actually will speak to my sensibilities? Because I remember when we did the recent specials.
Your sensibility.
That's right. And the middle one was a particularly James one in a way that maybe the first one wasn't.
Do you know, it could go either way. I'm not. I can't say anymore.
Okay.
Let's just say it's a bold old episode. Then there's The Devil's Court, which is written by Russell T. Davidson, directed by Ben Chesslaw. And that's the episode that's about the Beatles, which is very exciting. Then there's Boom, which is written by Stephen Moffat. And this was only confirmed recently that the Moth was coming back to write an episode. I bumped into him at the Edinburgh TV Festival where he had the script on his laptop and he had to cover it up quickly. And I kept that secret for many months. That's directed by Julie Ann Robinson. 73 Yards is written by Russell T. Davis, directed by Dylan Holmes Williams. Dot and Bubble, written by Russell, directed by Dylan Williams again. Rogue is written by Kate Herron.
Oh,
and
nice,
Bryony
yeah.
Redmond. Yes, yes. Kate Herron, who wrote on James.
Loki, among many other things.
Yeah, Loki, yeah. I think
although
it was
she
Loki,
directed Loki, didn't write Loki.
She didn't write it?
That was Michael Waldron.
Okay. And then there's The Legend of Ruby Sunday, written by Russell, directed by Jamie Donahue. And finally, Empire of Death. Another example of this new phenomenon, James, of films and TV shows named after your magazine.
That's true. That we've had the new Godzilla X Kong Final Empire. We've had Ghostbusters Fallen Empire. It does seem that Empire is in the ascendancy at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So Empire of Death. And that is, of course, many people's description of your role in the magazine.
So. Very good. Very good. And thanks. Accurate.
Good yeah. Boy,
thanks. Thanks.
We should always do early records.
Yeah, clearly they're particularly giddy. Yeah. So what else is in? Did you see the Wolf Hall news, Boydie? Were you excited about this?
Oh, yeah. They put out pictures of the Wolf Hall prequel
yes.
coming up on the BBC.
First Wolf yeah. Hall, colon, The Mirror and the Light, which there were pictures of Mark Rylance and Damian Lewis. Honestly, and I have never, ever seen Wolf Hall. And this despite the fact that I have many times been to Hever Castle, which is, I believe, where a lot of it was shot. I've never seen a Wolf
Wait
Hall.
Wait a minute. Wasn't Wolf Hall the one that was really dark?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you mean, and the title of the new show is called what?
It is called First Wolf Hall, colon, The Mirror and the Light.
Brilliant. Well, hopefully they do, you know, it'll be, yeah, even more light in this one.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope we can see what's going on. It remains to be seen. Got some exciting news here that Helen would appreciate, Boydie. Perhaps you can pass this on to her for us. This is Jared Padalecki, a.k.a. Sam Winchester from Supernatural, has said that he's been talking about the fact that he wants to do this reunion. He thinks the reunion might yet happen, and he's been, he's still excited to do it. So it's not exactly, it's one of these things where it's a new story that isn't really a new story, but he's been talking about a potential Supernatural reunion. That said, he's also been talking about one since Supernatural ended, so I guess it's not really news per se, but there you go.
Interesting.
He said some words.
Yeah. He said some words. What else have we got in the world of news? Oh, there was a clip, apparently, from Daryl Dixon season 2, but I've not seen it, so I can't talk about it.
Oh, is that a Walking Dead thing?
That's right, yeah. That is right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meanwhile, I should say the Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, finished in the US. We have not had it in the UK here, but there have been some mixed reactions to the way that show ended. So we'll see what happens after that. I don't know what's going on with the Walking Deadiverse, because they've got all these little spin-off shows. It feels like they're building up to some sort of Walking Dead Avengers, you know, with all these different shows. Except instead of having all the individual shows and then the team up, they had like a decade of the team up and then they've split into all these individual shows. But yeah, I don't know quite where all that is going at the moment.
We should mention that today, Monday, if you're listening to this podcast, will be the day of the Curb Your Enthusiasm finale, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Which Kay asked me why we weren't reviewing it the other day, and that's because no one has seen it, as far as I'm aware. No critics have been shown it, nor will they. The whole thing has been kept heavily under wraps.
Heavily embargoed.
But, by this time on Monday, we'll all know what exactly the joys are contained within. So we know it's an hour-long special. And I think there'll be some very exciting guest stars in it.
Okay. That seems a fairly safe bet, I would say.
Yeah.
Do you want to know something? When I was looking up Kate Herron's IMDb page just now, to see if she'd actually written many other shows. She actually hasn't written a lot of other stuff. She's obviously most famous as a director. But listed under her credits, under titles, it's the Empire Film Podcast, episode 461, featuring Kate Herron.
Wow.
So there you go. That's an exciting episode. She was great on that.
Oh, brilliant.
She also came along to our big live show as well. Our big live shows. So,
she did. I met her.
She did. She was lovely. I should probably mention, while we're talking about Empire, so I should tip my hat to the MCU that because we all clamored for it by popular demand, nay insistence, Finn Jones, aka Iron Fist, has hinted that he may be returning to the MCU. You asked for it, you got it. The Iron Fist is coming back. So that's very exciting, I think. But also, John Bernthal, who obviously played the Punisher in those kind of Netflix things, he has been seen on set of Daredevil Born Again. So it looks like all of those kind of Netflix-y characters are reconvening on the new Daredevil show. So I'm much more interested to see that now than I was previously.
God, those years when they used to churn out like 13 episode seasons of all those Marvel shows on Netflix seemed like a lifetime away.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. It feels like Netflix was in its infancy back then. I mean, it wasn't, but it just seems like such a long time ago. And you're right. Yeah, they did 13 episodes, which were far too long. And they just dragged so much by the end. I don't know why they settled on 13 episodes, but there you go. Also, people were talking about, and I think, did we talk about it on this podcast? I'm sure we did at one point, that the Netflix Ta-Dum is actually the two bangs of Kevin Spacey's ring from House of Cards. That's where it comes from.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. Which is something I don't think they like to talk about much these days.
No.
But yes, that is where the Ta-Dum comes from. It's the... when he bangs his little ring on the desk, on the Resolute
Very
desk.
Very similar that was.
That was, yeah. Thank you. Except I don't have a ring. But on the Resolute desk in the Oval Office.
Amazing.
Good, there you go. Excellent. Scintillated there, Boyd ears. Do we have any other news?
Do we want to step into the controversy surrounding... I'm just offering it up as a discussion point in the news section when Joanna Page slagged off the TV show Things You Should Have Done. Have you heard about this?
I assume, for the sake of argument, I have no idea who these people are or what you're talking about, and explain it to me like I'm a small golden
I
retriever.
I have heard all about this, but yeah.
It's a very interesting news story. So basically, Joanna Page has got a new podcast, which is basically a rival to this podcast, because it's a TV review podcast that she hosts with Natalie. Yeah. She hosts it with Natalie Cassidy, who's a famous actress who's in EastEnders. Still is in EastEnders, Kay?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah. They review TV stuff. It's called Off the Telly. It's on BBC Sounds. I don't know. I'm not promoting it. I'm just saying it's there if you want an inferior TV review podcast. but it made the news because in the episode before last, they talked about the BBC Three comedy Things You Should Have Done, which we, I believe, reviewed on this very show.
We liked it.
Did we? We all liked it.
What was it? Remind me what it was.
It was about the girl, the young, very naive girl who was left an orphan, and then she was left a list by her parents of things she had to achieve.
Oh, yes. It was the one that was basically all of us strangers, but a comedy. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so on this podcast, Joanna Page launched what can only be described as a rant about how much she didn't like that show, right? Now, bearing in mind, the interesting thing about this, I think it's fascinating because obviously she's a famous actress. She's in Gavin and Stacey,
we forget Judy from Love Actually.
Exactly, Judy from Love Actually. And she said, this is what she said about Things You Should Have Done. You know things I should have done? Not bother to fucking watch it, she said. I think she's obviously talented, talking about Lucia Keskin, who wrote it. I thought the show was shit. I don't often think that, right? I want to say well done on you because you've got your own show. I haven't got my own show. I've not written anything. So, you know, flipping heck, that's amazing. But I thought it was unbearable. It's not often that I can't watch something. I was so bored.
I think at one point she said her mum could have written it, right?
My mother could have written it. My mother could have done it. I just thought, my God, this is so unbearable. I'm genuinely bored, she continued. So a full throttle. Right, and what then happened was that the creator of the show, Lucia Keskin, did her own reaction video on TikTok, and it was on X, and you know all the things in which she kind of like just looked mournfully sad
while eating a banana. I actually do know this story.
Yeah,
yes.
right. While eating a banana, looking at pictures of Joanna Page and Gavin and Stacey posters on her fridge, on her wall, etc. It was a brilliant response, but then people got really angry with Joanna Page for being so harsh. You know, to this show, especially because she's a working actress and, you know, it's quite unusual for people in the business to slag off other things in the business. And, you know,
critics are allowed to slag things off unilaterally.
Yeah. But it does open all, like, I think on the one hand, I'm almost like, I think it's kind of amazing and brave that Joanna Page did it. I mean, she's obviously wrong because the show's really, really good. And the other thing was, there's loads of people saying, oh my God, I didn't even know about the show. Now I do, and it's brilliant, which is great. I mean, I even after we reviewed it, I watched the rest of the episodes and it's fantastic. It's a really, really funny show. So, but it all kicked off.
I think because I was just avidly watching this all unfold. And I think it's fine because some people were just like, you know, oh, she can't say this and whatever. And people are allowed to have their opinion. But for me, it was more exactly what you said. It's that obviously she's an actress. There's a certain code amongst, you know, professionals within a certain profession. But also it's like she knows how hard it is out there, right? The industry is in a really bad state at the moment. Things getting cancelled all the time. Really hard to get new things made, blah, blah, blah. She knows what it's like. In fact, I was trying to think what she's done recently, acting wise. Well, part of me was, I have to say, and while she is entitled to her opinion, I did think it was really harsh to, you know, really go as, you know, she almost doubled down on this criticism of this new talent trying to get something getting something made. And she knows how hard it is because I don't think she's done anything recently.
She's in an episode of Big Mood coming up, according to IMDb.
Okay. Well, she's doing a podcast now because probably, you know, she's also finding it tough. So just to go,
Hey, people don't fall back on podcasts. Podcasts are what people aspire to do with their lives, Kate. Like,
I know.
When she becomes a successful enough actress, now she is able to graduate to creating podcasts.
Okay, fine. I just felt like it was uncharitable, considering the fact she probably knows how hard it is in the industry. And she's diversifying. And so, like, yeah.
I mean, I think there were a couple of aspects to it, weren't there? There was the fact that she's obviously having a go at another actor for what, you know, for the work that she's done. And also, you know, having created the show and a young actor, but also her criticism was just it shit. Like there was no justification. There was no explanation. I like to think even when we go off on one about a show, we do at the very least give some kind of basic reasons for why we think it's shit, rather than just blanket condemning something.
Also, I think we acknowledge that, like, you know, when I'm reviewing sci-fi stuff, I acknowledge that, you know, actually it's not for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, you give it a go, but you appreciate that it's not your bag, in the same way that when I watch comedies, in fact, probably even this one, I was like, you know what, it's not for me. It's just not me. Mm. But it's not you, it's me. And I completely acknowledge that.
I think it does, it does highlight the contrast, the difference between, I'm going to say it, proper TV critics or critics and celebrities who, like, you know, I really like Joanna Page, by the way. I've met her loads of times. She's one that, what part of the whole shock of this story is Joanna Page is one of the nicest people in show business. You know, she's famously lovely and kind of just, you know, and I think her whole shtick is kind of like, what you see is what you get. She doesn't, you know, talk bullshit. So from her point of view, I imagine, and I think she's been on holiday. She hasn't responded to the furore about this whole thing as we speak, as we record this. But I think she's probably thought, oh, I was just being honest, you know, just expressing my own honest opinion, blah, blah, blah. But it was very hard. It was shockingly harsh. And coming from her, such a nice person. And as Kay said, for all of the reasons about, you know, supporting an up-and-coming talent, etc. It was just a massive, massive shock. And still is. I think people are just reeling from it. But I do think... I think the way we review stuff, I think, is more, you know, constructive. I mean, I've hated stuff, you know, but if it's a show that's sort of got, like, you know, A-list, remember that that show with all the A-list names talking about, you know, environmental issues?
Oh, my good God.
Yeah.
Kit Harington is magic.
Kit Harington, yeah.
And the Walrus. I mean, the Walrus.
Yeah. The Walrus.
For me, there's a difference between that kind of show that is like a glitzy, hundreds of millions of dollars, A-list stars, and this, you know, BBC Three up-and-coming vehicle, comedy vehicle for this young talent who's, you know, made famous on TikTok and YouTube. So there's a world of difference between those two. And I don't think we would slag off something like that in that same way
Do you know what, Boyd? I think it's like, it shouldn't even be an age thing as well. It should just be like when new talent is coming through and they've fought presumably very hard to get something made, to just get such a drubbing without any kind of, you know, It wasn't a considered opinion, was it? It was just like, it is shit. My mum could do better.
No, it was like a visceral. Yeah, it was like a visceral reaction to it. Yeah.
It felt like punching down, didn't it? Which seemed like an established actor punching down at this sort of like young person.
And surprising from Joanna Page, who is, as voices, lovely.
Really surprising.
I like that anyway, we are here critiquing criticism, which is perhaps most meta we've been today.
Listen, I wasn't even going to bring it up, but boy, don't you talk about
it.
I
think it's one of the most interesting TV reviewing news stories for ages. So yeah, I brought it up.
Do you know what we should do that each week now? We should bring up a review. We should review the review of whatever it is they're reviewing each week.
Yeah.
In a kind of meta 100%. Segment. I have one question for this, and this is the thing that that I still don't fully understand, is that the video that Lucia Keskin released showed her, you know, nonchalantly eating a banana while listening to this review, this scathing review of her show.
Very funny.
At the end of this, she goes over to a picture and puts a post-it with the word bald on it on someone. Now, first of all, I felt personally attacked. And second of all, I didn't understand the joke. What was that? Someone explain it to me.
I took it that she, because when Joanna Page was saying bad, it sounded like she was saying bald. I thought that was it.
Maybe was that it? I don't know. I've genuinely no idea. I did not. This is another example of me not understanding comedy. But I just didn't get the joke.
Boyd, what did you, have I got that wrong?
I didn't even notice that bit, so I don't know. No, I'm sure. That sounds right, yeah.
I thought is that, yeah. I think, well, I'm going to go back and watch it. I'm sure it's that Joanna Page kept on saying bad. Bad, but I thought it was just sounding a bit like bald, and then she just went up.
Oh, perhaps that's what it was. But I didn't get it, and I was like, I don't understand this. I do not understand this humor. It's clearly
far too progressive. God, James, don't start slagging off her comedy now. Right?
That joke, that bald joke, was terrible. My mum could have done better. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That was a very ramshackle news section. I'm enjoying this very sort of like chaotic theme that we've got going on
free
today.
Flow.
Yeah. And just to add some free flow to it, I have in no way prepared any kind of for the review section, because I honestly didn't know what we were reviewing until we started this show, for reasons already slightly outlined. But let's move on to the review section. And first, this week we have The Regime, which debuts on Sky and Now, and this stars Kate Winslet as the dictator of a kind of Central European, I guess, like oppressive regime, really. She is joined by, this is directed by Stephen Frears, actually. Boydie Stephen Frears. It was unclear from watching this whether he was awake or asleep during the... but, you know, we'll get onto that. This is created by Will Tracy. It's a political satire. It also stars Matthias Schoenaerts, Andrea Riseborough, Martha Plimpton, and, at some point, Hugh Grant, which is very exciting. Boydie, please tell us about The Regime.
Well, it's a curious one, this is, because, as you say, it's got an incredible array of talent involved. I mean, Will Tracy has worked on Succession and other stuff. And Stephen Frears, the legend, the man who fell asleep in the middle of my BAFTA Q&A with him and various other directors all those years ago. Still going.
Still one of my favourite stories.
Yeah. He is now 82 years of age, but, you know, good on him for carrying on. And sorry, that sounded...
Well done, you.
Well done, him. You know what I mean? You know, it's incredible. I hope I'm still reviewing TV when I'm 82. And as you say, it's got this incredible cast led by Kate Winslet, who plays this character of this, the leader of the Central American place. And she completely, it's like the opposite in Mare of Easttown, which was, you know, the other HBO limited series that she was involved with. This is a new HBO limited series, which was all about, you know, her being gritty and real and, you know, munching on a hamburger while she's driving and solving crimes, blah, 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 blah. This is like a heightened, very studied kind of performance. She's got a slight lisp, a kind of like a kind of slight speech impediment. She speaks in an ultra posh accent, almost like, you know, she's playing a member of the royal family. And this woman, this dictator, basically, Eleanor, spends the whole time swanning around being incredibly, being the absolute personification of a kind of a politician so entitled and exploitative and oppressive that she is basically a fascist dictator, and all, you know. And it's so, but I was, when this was first announced, this whole project, I think I was expecting it to be a bit like a Succession meets, you know, Armando Iannucci type shows, a kind of satire of politics itself, of what's going on in the world, of a Donald Trump style figure, obviously, you know, a female, and the character is kind of a bit like a kind of female Donald Trump style figure with weird obsessions that, and everyone around her is like, you know, is just literally doing what they can to please her and try and anticipate what she wants. But this goes down a really specific, it's much more specific, this story, than that. And it's particularly specific about how she's obsessed with possible like fungi growing in the surrounds where she lives in this elaborate palace. And she gets her hangers on to hire this guy, Herbert Zubak, who's a recently disgraced soldier played by Matthias Schoenaerts, to be her personal kind of diviner, who's got to walk around with her wherever she goes in the castle, with this kind of weird, ridiculous device, testing out whether there's any kind of like damp or
it's like
whatever.
A humidity detector.
It's a humidity detector, right? And the show is really becomes about her weird relationship, ongoing relationship with him, who is this kind of like working class soldier figure, who's like a, he kind of beats himself, you know, he kind of self-harms. He's got major issues. And it's very specifically about them and their weird relationship. And is it, will they, won't they? Is there something sexual going on? Is he going to end up, you know, as the ultimate dictator? Is he going to kind of, you know, get rid of her? Does he got an underlying motives? What's happening with her husband, who I thought was brilliantly played by Guillaume Gallienne, who's kind of a very likable figure and just kind of like is her, somehow manages to kind of like ride through all of her madness. There's also a brilliant Agnes, who's like her chief of staff, if you like, played by Andrea Riseborough recently of when we're talking about Alice and Jack. She's amazing as the kind of like the trying to be the voice of reason, trying to sort out everything that goes on in Kate Winslet's character's life. And she's got a son who is basically like shared with Kate Winslet's character as like this. She almost like has a little boy of her own. She doesn't have a little boy of her own. So she kind of almost like shares this little kid with the kid's actual mother, played by Andrea Riseborough. That's a weird, there's lots of weird little things going on. Long story short, I was not disappointed. I was just bemused, slightly bemused and confused by it because it just isn't what I was expecting. And I've watched like 5 episodes now, I think, of the 6. So I'm getting closer to the end. And as it goes on, it becomes slightly more of that political satire that you expect it to be. But it's still very, very specific. And she has so many weird hang-ups and weird obsessions. And Matthias Schoenaerts' character is also kind of very odd and strange and eccentric and kind of scary in a way that it's just difficult to get a handle on it of what they're getting at, if you like. I'm enjoying it. She's amazing. I'm enjoying her performance. She's funny. She's kind of over the top. Some people might take against it because it's very kind of studied.
Kate Winslet, bottom line, is having a ball in this role. And that's what really comes across, right? Yeah. Because as you say, she talks in this very clipped manner. Now, I wanted to know if either of you had made the comparison to another show we did recently with a woman who also holds herself in the same way. Mandy. Her mouth is on a shonk.
Oh, she's
like
got resting shonk face.
She's got shonky mouth face.
Yeah.
So she talks with this kind of like, her mouth is on the shonk. She talks in this really sort of exaggerated way. But it's so clear that Winslet is just having the time of her life playing this role. Because as Boyd says, you know, she's playing this dictator, chancellor character who is obsessed with mold. I mean, like, you can't even make it out. Yeah. It's preposterous. And it's completely, like, it is cuckoo bong, I'd say. But it's darkly funny and it is borderline preposterous, but if you can just lean into that, then it is very entertaining. And for me, I know what you mean. It's very hard sometimes to know what to make of it or what it's trying to do because it is just kind of nuts on so many different levels and there's these little weird quirks. But there's certain things I really enjoyed, like the dialogue. I just wrote down, there's great bits of dialogue, like one of the politicians, who are all scared of her and, you know, they're trying to like figure out what to do. And one of them refers to the other one as a mewling vulva, which I enjoyed immensely. And another one who compares the character of Herbert to, he's basically like a dog using a calculator. So, I mean, the dialogue's great. The performances are great. I think Andrea Riseborough has a brilliant role as that sweary taskmaster who's just taking no shit and just knows exactly what she needs to do in order to survive this regime. But Boyd, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned the standout scene of this whole episode,
I was getting to it.
Go on.
If you leave me
no
now.
No spoilers.
If you're talking about the If You Leave Me Now scene. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not a spoiler, but she performs at a big state banquet. She does karaoke, basically, and sings If You Leave Me Now, the classic 1980s Chicago song, and it is an absolutely brilliant scene.
But it's so spectacular because she kind of like part tunelessly sings it.
Yeah.
It's part spoken word and her husband's on the keyboard.
It's brilliant.
And I think that really, that one scene, I think just kind of like is the taste of the whole thing. It sets.
That's my favorite scene of the whole show. Yeah, completely, 100%. And it go on.
Do you not think that this is a show that's desperately trying to be something it's not? Like, it feels like Armando Iannucci is an incredible writer. And while there are a couple of good lines here which kind of veer into the kind of Malcolm Tucker sphere, I think the problem here is the writing just isn't up to what it wants to do. Because, like, it's a political satire that has very few teeth, certainly from my perspective, in that so she's clearly, like, supposed to be, like, a Putin-type character. But you're it's boring, is kind of what I'm saying. It's boring, it's shit, my mum could write better, that's basically what I'm saying.
Oh my God.
No, I genuinely, but in all seriousness, never go full page. I really struggle with this because I wanted to like it. And I want.
Do you feel like it's one note?
Yeah, well, I just feel like it fundamentally tries to be, you know, an In the Loop, a Veep, you know, a Death of Stalin, one of those. But it's not as sharp. The writing's not as clear. And it's quite rambling and boring because, you know, as Boyd said, it's very, very specific in what it does. But and Kate Winslet acts her absolute socks off. Like, she's so, like, she clearly wants this to be brilliant and is trying really hard to make it funny. But the material just isn't there for her. Like, her performance is spot on. But she just doesn't have enough to work with. So I just found myself being gently bored most of the way through this. Whenever Kate Winslet isn't on screen and Andrea Riseborough, who's also very good in this, isn't on screen, you're just like, I don't know what the point of this show is, because it doesn't really address any of these issues in a particularly sort of clever way. It's not crafted in a particularly arch satirical way. So kind of what you're left with is a not particularly funny, slightly rambling, deeply weird story about a Central European dictator. And I was just like,
I think it's funny in place. I disagree that it's not.
It had a couple of lines, and while it was cringe, the singing scene was, you know, quite well conceived.
Also, by the way, I will be commissioning an incubation unit chariot to be carried around by you two in the future.
100%. That's quite entertaining, which is being carried around.
And I think Kay, you identified with her character.
Being carried around in a hermetically sealed sedan chair.
And I will be making you hold, like a moisture detector.
Go into the room before you and say, yes, it's 41% humidity in the pod booth, Kay.
I liked it more than Jack U. Jones, but I know what you mean. I think I was alluding to it, and you've fully gone there. You've fully Joanna Paged it. But I do agree with you. I think the script isn't quite up to snuff, and it's because it gets bogged down in this very specific, and it gets even more specific as it goes on, if you like, or like a mixture of the two. So, by the way, and this sounds like a bit of a spoiler, but the whole mold and damp machine element of the whole, that kind of just gets dropped right after a while. Yeah,
that's the whole thing.
No, I know, but then other things come in, other obsessions of hers come in, and of the Matthias Schoenaerts character, almost, which are even more specific. And like, there's
is it all connected to, because it seems that the whole mold thing is because it's connected to her health and her father dying of a lung disease, and she's obsessed with not going the same way.
Well, you see, I think what it's trying to do is say, look, when you reach this level of power, of absolute power, you become these obsessions.
Yeah.
And you'll have to fill your life with drama and, you know, and you have to kind of like wield your power in, like, it's almost hinting that she knows what she's doing is fucking ridiculous, right? But she's still going to carry on doing it because it suits her to wield this nonsensical, idiotic power. And I think if you look at, like, you know, the stuff that Donald Trump, I think it's more Trump than Putin. Well, but both. Yeah, both. They do both say stuff that's absolutely ridiculous, right? Trump seems... the reason why it feels more like Trump slightly to me is because she almost is... She's trying to be entertainingly kooky and eccentric and mad, and everyone, you know, follows around, kind of
plays
along with it. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's, people do that. The people surround, you know, the entire Republican Party, right, has done that with Donald Trump. So I think for me, that feels like. But as James says, and I agree with it, the satirical points get deadened by the really slightly tedious specificity of the storylines, and it gets even more weird and freaking specific. And yet there are great scenes, like there's a great scene where Martha Plimpton comes as an American politician, and she has a big meeting, I think, in episode 2 or 3, and that feels like a bit of satire because it's kind of saying, you know, that Kate Winslet's character is good, she's more interested in making the news and being famous in America and causing a stir than she is really doing anything proper constructively, politically, or, you know, doing right by her.
Very Trumpesque.
Very Trumpesque as well. But it's a really, I enjoyed a lot of it. Don't get me wrong. It's very watchable. I wasn't bored, unlike James. I was slightly irritated sometimes by how long certain story threads were taking to play out. I loved the little gang of the politicians, the blokes, the male politicians, played by Danny Webb, David Bamber and Henry Goodman, as the people who kind of, these old guys, old white guys, trying to deal with this absolute lunatic of a leader and trying to please her. Things like those characters I thought was really fun. There's a really fun thing where they all go down to like a disco bar within the palace to talk secretly. Like there's this secret kind of like bar in the middle of the place where they kind of conspire against her. But it's not, doesn't quite work, I think, it doesn't quite work. And as you say, she may be having the time of her life, but she's also very, the character's kind of all over the place as well, by the way, without getting into too much detail. I could go on about it for ages, but like at one point she behaves in ways that completely contradict themselves as the show goes on.
Yeah, but to be fair, I mean, if you look at Trump, you know.
Yeah, but I don't mean like in her actions. I mean in her psychology. Oh, I think right. Her psychology is okay, all over the place.
It is a little bit. It's bounces around. I mean, yeah. Look, it does that thing where, exactly as you say, when someone is an authoritarian, whether they be Trump or Putin, whatnot, everyone around them kind of panders to their insane, capricious whims. And that's kind of what this is. But that is a point that can be made in one sentence. It doesn't need to be made over 6 hours. It's all I'm saying.
you're right. Yeah, I mean, it's true. It is true.
But the regime.
I think everyone should watch this first batshit episode. It's like, I mean,
should they?
Yeah, I think check it out.
Yeah, if you've got nothing to do, if you've got no plans.
Oh, James, come on,
James Page.
Oh dear, right.
James,
the struggling up and coming actress Kate Winslet. You're slagging her off.
Yeah, poor Kate Winslet.
I mean, Stephen Frears will be furious, but as we all know, he's not listening because he's asleep.
He's having a nap. It's fine.
Yeah. By the way, he didn't direct the whole show either. No, I know. He directed, he directed the first couple of episodes, then Jessica Hobbs.
And then fell asleep and someone else took over. Anyway, The Regime, which is on Now and Sky something. What Sky is it? Is it Atlantic?
Atlantic.
And when is
Monday,
it?
Monday today, and it's available in full as a box set on Sky, as well as going out on Sky Atlantic at 9 p.m.
Okay.
2024. Oh, dear.
Oh, God. Right. Next up, we are back on our Channel 5 beat with The Cuckoo, which stars Jill Halfpenny as the lodger from hell as she rents a spare room. Kay, let's have your halfpenny's worth on this.
Okay. So, as James says, Jill Halfpenny, she gives great bad penny energy here because she is, she plays Sean. So our main central characters are Jessica, played by Claire Goose, and Nick, played by Lee Ingleby, who are a couple who buy this kind of country home and are doing it up, but find themselves in financial dire straits. And so have to pull their daughter out of her fancy private school, and they need to take in a lodger. And so they sort of apply for people. They advertise for people, and none of them really fit the bill. And then one day, out of nowhere, Jill Halfpenny turns up as the character Sean, who basically inveigles her way into their life. And what we discover is that Jessica and Nick are having issues, not just financial, relationship issues. And she capitalizes on this. And when Nick's out one day, she just appears and she stumps up a load of cash as a down payment, knowing that they are in financial strife, and just appears in their life, gets her feet right under the table, much to the bemusement of their daughter Alice, played by Freya Hannon Mills, and Nick. And it's you know, she's an artist. She tries to pally it up with the daughter, who rightly finds it very weird. Nick is sus too, but Jessica's seemingly just happy to have someone to offload her marital and financial woes to. So I think Jill Penny is great. I think they're all, you know, good in this, but I think Jill Penny really is good.
Half
I mean,
penny.
She gives
half penny.
What is this, inflation?
What am I calling her?
Penny. Yeah, Jill Penny. Yeah, Jill 5 Bob Note.
Oh, God. Jill
keep
Penny.
In. Keep this in.
You have quite literally shortchanged her.
Jill Halfpenny. I mean, she is like a walking red flag. And yeah. And you know, I found this, we've done quite a few Channel 5 dramas recently. And I think of all of them, I was, you know, I enjoyed this one the most. Like, I thought it was very intriguing to know what the fuck her deal with. She is so overtly, you know, a wrong'un, but what is going on and why has she chosen this family?
This has had quite a bit of above the line advertising. You've seen there have been bus shelters all over the place pushing the cuckoo. So Channel 5 are clearly quite quite behind this one.
What do you think, James?
Do you really want to know? I mean, honestly, in your heart of hearts, yes, do you actually want to know?
In a critique, a good critique,
in a non-pagey kind of way. I mean,
non-pagey
in
way.
It's not terrible. Like, I didn't enjoy myself particularly, but it's reasonably well put together. She is in that kind of, you know, the way that Andrew Scott plays Ripley, in that it's a different spin on that character. So when Matt Damon, I'm digressing here, you may notice, when Matt Damon played Tom Ripley, like, he's played as this kind of like very charming playboy. When you see Andrew Scott's version of him, there's something just deeply wrong from him from the beginning. Like, there's a sort of psychopathy
to him.
Wait,
are we reviewing Ripley now? I can't tell.
I'll get to a point, I promise, eventually.
Fine.
You're getting your half pennies worth from me. so he does get to, you know, he's slightly psychotic. And you get that here as well, that when you see Sean, like, she has this, like, proper, as you say, wrong and energy. Like, it's like, it's not like, oh, like, they're gonna lodge her, oh, she's lovely, oh, she's lovely, she's lovely, oh no, she's not lovely. It's not like that. It's like, she walks in, you're like, you're a psychopath. Like, that's just it. The second she walks through the door, you're a mentalist. Like, what is going on? And so she has this sort of, and it's, there's a touch of, like, the Hooded Claw about it. There's a touch of panto villain. Like, she's tiptoeing around the house and she's rifling through their stuff. And, like, Lee Ingleby, who's, like, the least subtle man alive, is, like, doing dodgy stuff. And she's peering through the keyhole. Like, she's literally looking through. Like, it's all a little bit hammy. But then she, like, she sits down and she's probing away at kind of Jessica's insecurities and finding out stuff. And then making up random lies about her having an autoimmune disease. So the plumber gives them a free shower. It's like, okay, there are probably easier ways of inveigling your way into someone's lives, but, you know, you go, girl, do what you need. And but yeah, so I found it lacked, shall we say, a degree of subtlety, but it's not bad. Like, it's fine. I think it does what it sets out to do. I think the last time we reviewed a Jill Halfpenny show was The Drowning. Do you remember this, Boydie? Which I want to say was another Channel 5 one. You and Terry were like banging the drum for it. You loved it. And I think I had much the same issue with that. I felt it was a little bit sort of unsophisticated, but, you know, it's good, you know, for what it does.
Yeah, I think Jill Tapney Hapney is... It's very good.
Tuppence Halfpenny.
Tuppence Halfpenny. Tuppence Middleton. Tuppence Halfpenny.
It's true.
Be a good collaboration. Yeah. sorry. Yeah, she's very effective. I read an interview with her where she talked about how at one point I think the roles were reversed and that Claire Goose was going to play the psycho character.
Yeah.
And she was going to play it. Yeah. Which is interesting. But I think you're right. She does give very good, creepy, weird energy. I thought it was these Channel 5 thrillers, the reason they work, the reason, you know, they put money into advertising them and the reason why they carry on making them is because they are very effective in drawing you in. And that's their whole kind of method, is to kind of find thrillers that have about them a certain intrigue. And I'm genuinely fascinated. I've only watched the first episode. Have you carried on watching, Kay?
No.
Because I want to know what her deal is. I want to know what, you know, why the fuck has she targeted this family? What is her, what's gone on? Well, it's a little hint in the first episode.
At the end of the first episode, it kind of spells out why she is such a mentalist.
Yeah, kind of, but not fully. I don't know. I'm interested enough to watch certainly the second episode where I think it fully gets revealed.
Do another Love Rat. You can be our Channel 5 correspondent.
You're all right, Halfpenny. Yeah.
No, because I'm intrigued too, but I just don't know if I'll be able to get around to it.
But as they go, I think this one was pretty well made, and I think it's all, and all of the cast is good. They're all really good, I think, you know, as well as her being giving off that energy. The daughter, like, one thing that this is a bit of a trope, I think, now I've noticed, right? The daughter just hates her mum, right? Just like for no good reason. The dad is the one who's had an affair, right? And but the daughter kind of irrationally lashes out against her mum at every opportunity. And I've seen that a lot recently. A lot of, like, dramas
daughters
where...
daughters and mothers.
Yeah, it's daughters and mothers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the thing.
Is that, it's not is like, that yeah. thing?
I think it is a thing. Yes,
it is a thing.
It is a thing.
Particularly at their mums, not their dads. Like,
not
she's
with my
with
mother,
because
she's glorious, but, you know, it yeah. is a thing.
Yeah, but so that slightly irritated me, because I thought it was so weird. Like, what's her problem with the poor mum?
No, it's not weird, Boyd. It's not, honestly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had no issue with that plot point.
Fine. No, I didn't have... I'm not saying it's not believable or anything. It's more...
Yeah. But it's
slightly
annoying. Yeah, there's a displacement thing there, isn't it? Like, if she's closer to her father, and if she probably knows her father had this affair. Jessica's been particularly upset about this thing. Maybe that strained their relationship even further. And also, you get... Like, Jessica's quite critical of Alice as well. So they probably do have slightly strained relationship anyway.
And hormones.
And there's that too. Add a psycho to the mix and see what happens.
And you got yourself a Channel 5 film.
Yeah, that's right. Well, toss a halfpenny to the cuckoo then, which airs on Channel 5 when, Boydie?
Today, Monday, the 8th of April, 2024, and it airs stripped across the next all four nights, Monday to Thursday, 9 o'clock.
Well, every night, so every night's like cuckoo,
yeah,
cuckoo.
Yeah, every cuckoo. Night, cuckoo bong. Okay, cuckoo good. Bong. Cuckoo bong, cuckoo bong halfpenny every night. Yeah.
Wow. And finally this week, we have Baby Reindeer, I guess, because the screen has literally arrived late last night. And I'm going to read from you a snippet from the Pilot TV WhatsApp group, just so that you can understand what happened here. Where Boydie says, "We've now been assigned Baby Reindeer," to which Kay replies, "I'm going to bed in 8 minutes. Can it be watched in 8 minutes?"
Yeah. What time is it? 8 minutes to ten. Like, not like midnight or anything. Not, you know.
Listen, it'd been a long day. You know, I'm a morning person,
you
right?
Are.
And we were recording at 8.
I think you proved that today on this podcast, definitely.
Yeah, but Boyd, you know, like the diligent professional years, watched the whole thing, Boyd?
No, I watched some of it.
We should say this is written by and starring Richard Gadd, and it's based on his play of the same name. And it involves, he's a comedian, and it involves a stalker, doesn't it, Boydie?
Yes,
crucially, a small Arctic mammal. They're not Arctic, are they? Where they're from? No. Where are reindeer from? The North Pole. I'm saying that's Arctic. Whatever.
Yeah. The reason it's called Baby Reindeer is because the character played by Jessica Gunning, Martha, who is his stalker, compares his look to a baby reindeer. She says he looks like a baby reindeer.
Cute.
Yeah. Interestingly, there's a theme to this week's shows that we're reviewing of bonkers.
She got a shonky mouth.
Bonkers women. Basically, I'm afraid. The mad woman in the wherever. Where it's the mad woman in the palace.
The mad woman in the Netflix,
The mad woman in the household, invading the household. Or in this show, the mad woman who's stalking Richard Gadd. And it's interesting that there are all three shows revolve around very scary.
And this one's Martha the stalker. At any point in this, does Ben Affleck turn up and go, "My stalker's name is Martha too. Why did you say that name?" No?
No. Okay. No. So that's a Batman versus Superman reference from up to date from James.
I'm cutting edge. I'm absolute cutting edge.
Absolute cutting edge, yeah. Now, the interesting thing about this show is it's based on a true story. So Richard Gadd really is a stand-up comedian and actor. He was in Code 404, might be the thing that people recognize him from, but he's a very accomplished stand-up. And he did get stalked by a woman, and I think he's like changed names and, you know, identities, etc. But he then created his own show, starting at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival a few years ago, based on the fact that he started to be stalked by this woman. As we've said regarding Kate Winslet and Jill Halfpenny, this really is key. The key to this show is Jessica Gunning, who I think you might recognize from The Outlaws, the Stephen Merchant show that she's been in. You recognize she's been in lots of stuff. She is always great, but she is absolutely fantastic. And as soon as you clap eyes on her, the first time they meet is that she walks into the pub where he works, and she's got very scary energy right from the off. And so she's absolutely brilliant. He's kind of like, he is like a deer in the headlights. That description suits him. The more he gets to know her and her weirdness and her eccentricities and her increasing obsession with him, the scarier it gets for him. I thought it was really interesting and really and stalking itself, you know, it's got that thing where stalking itself is a very serious, common crime, you know, it's really scary. I know people who have been stalked actually quite well, and it can be terrifying. And it acknowledges all of that, but it does equally make very dark, very funny comedy out of it as well. And that's, I think a lot of that is down to Richard Gadd's script and his performance and her performance. It's a really interesting show. So yeah, I would recommend it from what I've seen.
And where can people find Baby Reindeers?
That is on the Netflix on from Thursday, and it'll all arrive 2024. It'll all arrive on Netflix then. Yeah, in the crazy lady week, it arrives on Thursday.
Right. Okay. That is it for that one. What else is out this week, Boydie? Well, we've already all the many things that were embargoed we couldn't talk about. Fallout, which airs on Thursday on Prime Video, the 11th, and we'll be reviewing that on Pilot TV Plus, also on Thursday. Franklin, which lands on Apple TV Plus on Friday the 12th, which we may or may not ever talk about at any point. What else is there?
There's the new series of Meet the Richardsons, which is one of my favourites, on Dave on Monday at 10 o'clock today, which is... John Richardson and Lucy Beaumont, real-life married couple of comedians doing a spoof mockumentary about their lives. It's always really, really funny.
Wait, is that the one that you've been on?
I am in this series.
Oh,
I'm in this
of course series. You are. Yeah.
Coincidence?
Yes, yeah. I think not.
Mm. I mean, what can I say? They needed my acting services. I mean, I haven't seen it. It could be true.
Who do you play, Boyd? Who do you play?
I play myself.
TV is Boyd Hilton. Really?
Yeah.
We definitely have to review
yes,
this.
Yes, we do.
Come on.
Well, there you are. Yeah, you might have to, I don't know what episode I'm in. Yeah,
I'll be like, writing straight, episodes. Acting is shocking.
Yeah. So there's that. There's season 2 of Heartbreak High, the reboot on Netflix on Thursday, which was, you know, the Australian teen drama, which is very popular.
I used to love that back in the day.
Yeah. It's a good show. I think I watched a bit of the reboot, and it's pretty good. And I think that's probably about it when it comes to... pilot shows.
Okay. And what, oh my God, what is our pick of the week? I don't even know where to begin with this.
Yeah. I mean,
don't watch television. It's the only thing
I think
I
it is
say.
Baby Reindeer. I think if you'd have, both of you watched, had time to watch Baby Reindeer, it would have ended up pick of the week. Because,
oh my God.
But the regime, I am going to finish the regime.
Please let us know so we don't have to.
I know, I'm on episode 5. And by the way, Hugh Grant doesn't show up until like episode 4 or 5. Wow. So you have to wait for him to arrive, which is annoying because he's really good.
Out of the two shows we reviewed, I'll go for the regime.
Out of the two shows we reviewed, I will go for the YouTube documentary short that I watched, which was basically Andrew Lincoln talking about his Walking Dead spin-off. Mainly because I don't know about you guys, so I've not seen Andrew Lincoln in a lot of things since Walking Dead. He was in Walking Dead for a very long time. I'm so used to him talking in that slight, that very gravelly, like American, but also very Southern drawl. I didn't realize, like, I'd forgot what he actually sounds like from this life. He's got an incredibly posh, quite high, clipped voice, and it's so fucking funny to see him dressed as Rick doing like an interview on set for The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, talking about that character in this wild voice, which is his voice, which feels like it's been taken out of the regime. Like it's wild. So that is my pick of the week.
Okay, that's great. Now actually pick
none of them.
Like
go outside and play in
you
the sunshine. I refuse to on general principle. I cannot in good conscience recommend anything this week. Sorry.
All right, JP.
That's it. I'm going full page. If we are all on the same page, if you will.
Outpages.
Oh, very good. right. That's it for this week's show. If you enjoyed it, do head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a 5 Joanna Page rating. Obviously, feel free to tell us that you think your mum could do better. If you'd like to follow us on the socials, we are at Kay Ribera, at Boyd Hilton, at James C. Dyer, and of course, at Pilot TV Pod. And we will be in your ears on Thursday, as we've mentioned, doing Prime Fallout and a show from the vault yet to be decided. That's something we're going to need to discuss. But on next week's show, I don't know what we're going to end up doing. Blue Lights is back for a second season. That feud show that Boydie's been banging on about for at least a year finally arrives on Disney Plus. So I'm sure we'll be doing that. Red Eye, of course, comes to ITV as well.
Embargoed.
Oh, is it?
Heavily embargoed.
Hang on. The show that aired like 1,000 years ago is heavily embargoed.
I don't know what to do about that. We need
embargo.
To have a word. I'm going to intervene and have a word with Disney.
That's it, Boydie. Yeah. Boydie, go on, you do it. Take them to task. But yes, we will be doing some of those. And I seem to recall that Leslie Sharp is going to be on the podcast. Is this true, Boydie?
Correct. Yes.
Exciting.
I remembered.
And yeah, we may also have Walton Goggins as well talking Fallout. So that'll be fun too. Until then, however, I know what you're thinking. That podcast was just shit. I hated it. Absolutely fine. We'll see you next week. Pilots out.